Now this is Channel 2 Right and the continuation of the visit with Red Smith this Wednesday, the 14th of July, 7 to 9.
Yeah, you don't even hear the frogs out there anymore. They've gone.
But if he'll stay away from there 6 months, they'll be back just as heavy as that. Those deer over there will have 2 and 3 fawns if the feed is available. But you take, when I first started in 1930, we used to wait until it rained at night and cut off about 3 o'clock in the morning. Then we'd go over there where one of these big forest fires had gone through, and we would find a track, and we'd track the deer up and try to shoot it when it got up. Kind of like the Indians did it hundreds of years ago. We were lucky, very lucky, if we saw one deer a day. In fact, if we saw a couple a season, we were doing pretty good. But the natives over there hunted them pretty relentlessly with lights at night and everywhere. Everybody across the river thought it was just part of their daily bread to have venison in the smokehouse at all times of the year. It didn't make any difference.
Yeah.
Then when the CC boys went in there and put up fences and cut right-of-ways through there, and one thing and another, we began to see as high as 13 deer in a group. Unheard of. And this was 2 years from the time that they put a kind of a strict control in there. Then the herd dropped off. And now I spend probably from $300 to $500 a year just to hunt in the scrub. Feeding and taking care of dogs, the beating around of the trucks that I take over there, the amount of gasoline and other things, and groceries we eat and all this. I expect I'm very conservative when I say $300 to $500.
Yeah, I think so.
And when you see as high as 30 deer a season within gunshot of a shotgun and don't see one buck, you know something is out of balance. Now, if you take and put 20 deer out here, equally divided, 10 bucks and $10, and even if they just have one each, the herd normally will be 50% of each all the way through. Then some years it'll go along one way and some years it'll go along the other, but as the end result, well, they should be nearly equal. But you keep killing off half of the males and letting all the doe increase, and how long would you have any pasture out there? Had an awful lot of illegal kill of doe over there in the last few years.
Yeah.
And an awful lot of killing a doe and running off and leaving it.
Yes.
Now, I brought up back there that if you saw a deer, you killed it because that was all you saw, and then you took that meat home and you ate it regardless of what risk you would run, and you took that deer home. I can turn my head the other way when someone kills a doe by mistake or otherwise and takes it home, but I can't condone the man that runs off and leaves that thing laying there knowing that he killed a doe when he started the shooting. Or the man that I know has killed 17 doe in this past year and taken them home. What in the world did he need with 17? And a lot of it in front of our dogs. He had no investment whatsoever. He just goes over there and climbs up a tree where he knows that the deer are going to be forced through there eventually and shoots it and takes it. He takes a risk, and that's all he takes. But this is what happened. This is what your gators are doing. I mean, you don't kill gators. Used to go over there at Salt Springs with a net, gill netting over there. And it was a very unusual sight to see a gator in Salt Springs run. But I expect if you go over there now and start down the run, you'll see 5 or 6, most anywhere you look around, with their eyes popped up there watching you. And this is what's happened in the Everglades. It didn't take but 2 years for them to get so thick down there. And when they stopped killing them, they're going to become overpopulated. They're either going to start deteriorating of their own accord, or they're going to expand into areas where they become a real nuisance. And this is the same with your frogs. I mean, if you'll stop frogging in that area for a very short length of time. Why, one frog lays an awful lot of eggs, and an awful lot of frogs survive. It wouldn't take very long for it, and as soon as it did, the birds would have more eggs, more. The birds would lay more eggs and raise more young, and so forth. As soon as the food got real good, it goes back to the old law of supply and demand, as far as I can see it. You take your pasture out there and your cows.
No, I wouldn't go on any past statement or analogy. I just take the plain reasoning like you're doing down there in the park from your experience.
Well, it just has to be wrong to see that many and not be able to see. And I'm not. I'm just one. Says there's 12 of us. Now, we may see the same deer many different times. There's no way for us to know this.
Well, now, look, I went up and talked to the boy in the sheriff's office, and I forget his background, but he had had, he knew all about airboats and all. I forget. And I think they got him here in hopes that something would come of it. And I sat down there and talked to him about 20 minutes one day. That's all I needed. And I called up down there ahead of time, told them that I, what my situation out here was, and my estimation, these airboats were a nuisance. They kept you awake all night and also were doing what I said. But that was just my limited experience. I went down and talked to him. And he had all sorts of experience with them. Mm-hmm. Where the people go out with in the airboats to see where the pools are and get fish where they're trying to breed. And now there's no law of supply and demand there. You've got, and you see, they can go along and scoop up the ducks at their roost in those airboats. I don't think you're going to have anything left of the wildlife until there's some curb on the airboats. Now, that's my feeling from very limited experience. I think it seemed like to me, if a man wants to fish, he ought to get in a little boat and go out there and fish that way. You don't want to use modern science to overcome a few fish, ducks. You want the sport of it. If you want to, it seems to me like it's misapplied. But the point, the only point, the way it sort of got in my mind, Red, on the canal and the other things, it could do the same thing, you know, with a jet port. you can lock horns like that. It's the same thing as that Southeast Asia policy. You see, Rusk said on the radio that they thought that a commanding presence of the United States on the mainland there within a fairly short time would cause the North Vietnamese to negotiate.
Yeah.
But he said they never found out because the Peace Party got them at home.
Yeah.
Now, That's what I'd want to do. I'd just take a recess for 5 years on any of these controversial things and get on some of this work. You know what I found out about this about this little prairie back here on my place? If you just get in there and pull the hyacinths out, just like we used to hold a row of cotton,
mm-hmm.
in no great trouble. But you got to poison everything.
No, I mean, for instance, there is a machine already built that will harvest hyacinths. Now, if we can find a use for hyacinths, I can take the items I sell down in my near and build a machine and go out there and harvest the hyacinths.
Yeah.
Because you have your forage harvester, which has a great wide head, and it with just the paddle that holds the grain against the sickle bar, do away with the sickle bar, but just have your traveling canvases and this paddle, and mount it on a floating type of barge, and bring it up and chop it and blow it into a carrier barge right behind you with screen walls so the water can drain back out of it and take it in. Yeah, I think a man could spend a lifetime on Rodman Pool if he built the right size machine. If it was too big, he'd probably only get out there every other month. If it's too small, why, he'd never keep up. But hyacinths, I think, can be controlled if you can find a use for hyacinths or the funds for it rather than spray. Now, most fishermen will argue, some of your bigger newspaper fishermen and people that write sports argue that you have to have a certain amount of hyacinths to create shade and breeding areas for fish. And the artificial way of harvesting, the mechanical way of harvesting, would be an answer to this. It would leave the little nooks and eddies, and you could actually leave what you wanted to leave and harvest what you wanted to harvest. The coontail and stuff that grows from the bottom is a meaner item to handle. It's kind of like trying to shoot a bullet through a piece of silk to tell me it can't be done because the silk will give too easily and the bullet can never actually penetrate unless it has a backing, but it's hanging free. They tell me, like tying a horse to the end of the limb, he can't break the line unless you tie him to the trunk, you know. The fact that it gives and gets out of the way. The coontail and such as that is growing up several feet off of the bottom, and it's a mean thing to do anything with. But that, they tell me, the deepness of the water, it has to have enough sunlight reach it to cause it to grow.
Yeah.
Now they want to draw Rodman Pool down 5 feet. Eliminate it. Well, they're not going to eliminate it. It just means that they're going to open up new areas that are the right depth for it to grow. They're going to leave an awful, stinky, unsightly mess until it has time to reproduce some other sort of growth, which is going to be brambles and small willows and this type of thing for a period of time. Mostly careless weed, I expect. It's going to be a real swamp for a while if they draw it down. But the mechanical harvesting can be done, but first you've got to find an economic reason for it, and I don't know what that reason is going to be for it.
Well, the economic reason, you know, I would go along with that, would be that you need more places for fish and wildlife, and less place for the airboats.
Well, but...
And let the people come out from Jacksonville to fish out there, but keep the damned airboats off of it. I don't think anything gonna survive with those airboats.
You're talking about a minority now. You know it's against the law to pick on a minority.
Yeah. That's right.
We're going to come into a more and more controlled society. There's no way in the world to get away from it.
Yeah.
Birth control and everything else is going to one of these days be a very regulated thing.
Very regulated.
Okay.
And we're just wishing it off on ourselves. We could avoid it.
Oh yeah.
We're just taking all the steps we can in that direction.
Right.
Just hurrying it along.
Yeah, it's just like the deer kill that I'm speaking about. It should be legally controlled in a better fashion that's being done. But you would be surprised at the hunters who would just raise all sorts of hell if you match them killing does. But in Pennsylvania, they've been doing it for years, and many of the other states have been doing it for years. They get more population and harvest more deer than we do. Take Cape Cod. They let you shoot any deer that moves, but only for 1 week. But back when I was living there, every so often they had to have a 2-week deer season in order to keep the deer herd down, because they were trampling gardens and getting in the streets and doing everything else. I mean, this is what happens if they have the feed and a chance to grow. They'll increase, but they've got to have that chance, just like your frogs have got to have the chance. If he'll hunt it once a month, I don't think he'll hurt it. But if he's out there, as you say, 3 or 4 nights a week, why, yeah, he can hurt it.
He don't come over there now at all because there's nothing there.
Well, he will be. I mean, it doesn't take any time at all for him to come back. I don't know how often they breed. Frogs only once a year, do they?
No,
I don't know. But I do know that I live right by the Catholic Church there in Ocala, and there's a drain that absolutely goes dry part of the time. But very much of the time, it has some water, and after a heavy rain, why, it has quite a bit of water. And for some reason this year, I didn't hear the pinkwinks. I don't know why, but in the past, even though it'd been perfectly dry after heavy rain, well, you'd hear what we thought were little frogs or something, you know, noise I'm referring to. And they would be tremendous out there. But as far as frogs, we never see any frogs there. But this year, I never did hear them. That's, I don't know why.
What's the best subjects you talk about?
I don't know.
From time to time. I had one little girl in a class, and she was in this protest when they struck the university up here last year, the year before that. And she had been a part of that movement for some time. And when it fizzled out here, she took it so hard, she followed it on up the country. Well, it just happened that she could talk. She would talk. And she came out here, time to her, and talked. And I talked to her there. And I hadn't thought about this, but until then, she was so taken in by what she proposed to do, you see, that she could just drive herself. And she talked about all those cases. I could recall some of them. You see, the authorities would tell them they couldn't meet and walk a hall, and that would be just a sign for them to go there and meet and walk a hall. She'd be right there with them. Well, she actually had very little to say about what had happened. And as I talked to her and worked with her and several of the others, you might say her thesis was so strong that it blinded her. She had no idea who she was working with or who she was working against.
Well, it's a form of hysteria that I think ecology at the moment is that, I have it on my own pet subjects, I expect, and everyone does. They blind themselves. But you were talking a minute ago about slanted views. what the papers can do and so forth and so on. I was tuned in the night that your colored man resigned. You weren't at the meeting, I'm sure, and I probably didn't see this thing, but we have cable TV down there, and I was tuned in.
I saw a little of it, but I didn't see much. I couldn't stand it.
Well, in the first place, I can't understand how a Negro with no more apparent education than he had was in that particular position. This was the first thing I couldn't understand.
Oh, that's simple.
Well, and all right, and this the second thing was that
they got a position there, they got a
I know. But the second thing was that here he is, he's got a colored program going out over the air. And he's standing up there and said, eyes against this thing, the eyes is this. Say, give me some questions from the floor. I'll answer anything. He said, just give me some questions from the floor. And there was about two people that questioned something, and he answered it about the way he wanted to answer it. And you got the impression that he had some 500 people in the hall.
Yeah.
And that he was speaking to this group, and perhaps some from both sides, but probably more on his side. It just happened that the camera made a bad swing at the end of this thing. And there must have been as many as 12 people in that room. And every one of them, the hippie type or dedicated type, whatever you want to call it, I mean, they were rabid in their belief or whatever it was. If they were believing the way I did, they were rabid, it didn't matter. I mean, but this was the impression you got from what you saw of the people. But this was the crowd he was talking to. It couldn't have been over 12 people in that room when he said, I resign right now. And I couldn't see who he was hurting by resigning. I just couldn't see the benefit of that at all. It looked like it was real help to the college and everyone else concerned for him to resign. But this is, part of it's been these slanted views. I mean, I had a teacher in high school. I don't know whether you've ever been exposed to this book or not, but it goes into theory back in 28. Now, this would be far-fetched. It's trying to explain the fourth dimension. Not that it knows what the fourth dimension is, but it tells the history or day of life of something that is just a dot. And all that dot can see is up. It can't see the inside, so therefore it doesn't know there's anything surrounding it at all. And then the next thing was a line. And since it was headed in one direction, it could only see in one direction and possibly up. And then it had the circle, which could possibly see all the way around in all directions, but still it was in a flat plane. It was a real eye-opener for a kid in high school who liked to read, to read this thing and take it from a very limited viewpoint up, not explaining what the fourth dimension was, but saying that from this dot's viewpoint, there can't be anything else but just this, and from this line's viewpoint, there can't be anything but just this, and therefore, from our viewpoint, there can't be anything except the possibility, and then goes on to talk about explain. But he was an algebra and mathematical teacher, and it was brought up in the plain and solid geometry is an outside thing, and so it explained how narrow some viewpoints can be.
That seems like a long way back, doesn't it?
It is a long way back, but I'll not forget it.
Yeah, those good old math teachers and the language teachers, they had their little books, and they taught out of those books, and they knew those books pretty well.
very well. But it's, I've got a son that's up here in the experimental lab for DuPont. He's got a doctor's degree. I believe he studied the effects of radiation on plastics. And he's up there. He just, all the work he does is secret, of course, until it's finished, because they're as jealous of their things, even though they're going on the open market. They don't want the other companies to know what they're doing until they're ready. But he's just completed a water filtering device.
Oh, really?
And, but, I mean, the letters he writes have a lot of misspelled words in them. And I was up here at a meeting with Doug Patterson the other day. I don't know whether you know him or not, but he's in the agricultural program. He's coordinating this vocational type of thing to do with that. And he showed some slides on there that asked questions and gave answers to the type of thing that they would like to coordinate. I couldn't help but notice the misspelled words in there, because when I was a kid, you were taught to spell. I mean, if you didn't spell, you didn't have much chance to get promoted.
Yeah.
And that went by the boards for so long until...
Oh, yeah. I ought to go to the chamber and some of the civic club. I put all my energy in other places, you know. I don't have any left over, but I need to go. Let me tell you, a good bit of the talk I hear, the lines are drawn a little bit tight, I think, now. One of the boys is out here, and he graduated up today, and he brought his parents by here. And his father had been with Winn-Dixie since 1939, or at least in that same organization. And he's in the office at Miami. That's a huge thing, Winn-Dixie. And you know what, Ren? I wish I could just tell you what he said. I tell you what started off. I said, this boy ought to see the country. He ought to join up with Eli Witt. Go around and talk to people and that would talk and have a thing, you see. I didn't mean John and Eli Witt, but I meant if he could he'd been to school all his life, if he could just get out and talk to people, just talk to people without a job, you see, for a while. They are wealthy. He's not hurting for money. And he picked me up on that just like that. Eli Witt was outmoded. And he started lining out the merchandising system of the Winn-Dixie stores. And the thing of it was, Red, it had a cutting edge. Everything he said in a, you know, professional way still had a cutting edge almost as sharp as that girl who was in the protest movement.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to... I'd work with this boy. He's one of the nicest fellows I ever saw.
Well, it is the job of sales promotion for any people we buy a product from to sell us on the idea that the item that they built is the finest or the cheapest.
Yeah.
Or the finest and the cheapest.
Yeah.
Now, this is what they get paid for. And they live it, breathe it, smoke it, eat it, drink it, and that's it. Just as that girl does what she is being sold on at the moment, or what she has sold herself on.
Yeah.
We handle a broad line down there. I mean, a variety of lines, almost a general store down there. There's many items that Alice Chalmers manufactures that we don't attempt to sell. There's some items that New Holland builds that we don't attempt to sell.
Yeah.
Massey Ferguson has some items. We wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah.
But if we were a company man, we wouldn't be a company man if we didn't have the viewpoint that this is absolutely best. And many of them have that idea just because a good salesman has got a hold of them and sold them, that's all. There's not so many of them that just say, well, if I don't have this belief, why, I won't have dollars in my pocket. Those are your sharpshooters. Those are the salesmen we're trying to avoid.
Yeah.
They'll tell you anything and do anything in order to make a sale.
Yeah.
And that one, he's strictly for the dollar for himself. There's no in-between. But many of these young people are just as sold against the idea that it's wrong. I mean, for me to make a profit out of my business down there. They are sold on that.
Oh, really?
Sure. And it's done by the teachers through the years who had them at the age where it would really sink in.
Oh, really? I didn't know anything like that went on.
Well, it's in the papers nearly every day. It's in the magazines a great deal. As much as you read and hear, you must know there's a movement against profits out of organizations. They're talking about DuPont. They're talking about GM, and they're talking about these other big companies. But it doesn't matter. Those big companies are exactly the same basis that my company's on.
Oh, I see. Really?
What happened to your boy that went into the sale of electronic equipment? Is he still in business?
Yeah. He made it.
Making a profit.
Yeah.
But they think that's wrong.
Well, I hadn't extended it to you.
Well, it gets right down. When you get down to it, it's wrong for you to make a profit on this farm.
Yeah. Well, I don't.
Now, it's all right for you to teach or work for wages and make a living.
Yeah.
But it's wrong for free enterprise to make a profit. And the only thing I can think of is that teachers who have, through the years, not been kept up in the pay schedules and have had problems all the way through, have resented the fact that classmates went into business and some of them made money. They don't think about the ones that went broke and such as this.
Yeah.
But there's some companies that are enormous and make enormous profits, we all know that. But when you get right down to it, I've got a corporation down there. It's what I've got. It started out from a partnership, and I'm lucky if I make 1.5% profit at the end of the year, but they don't think I ought to have it.
Well, you got to care to say. You know, I don't hear the sort of talk I have always heard. It all has an edge to it, Red. Wherever I go, it seems like. And I don't know what it is.
You're the only person I sit down and talk like this with. So I don't know. I mean, the people that I talk with.
Yeah.
Business connected in one fashion or another, or our close friends.
Okay.
You know.
I put the tape on in there for the first part of it. It clicked off. I'll let you take it home. You know what you could do? You could find out. I've worked with tape now 3 or 4 years. That's most of my I spend most of the time on it. And you can hear more about what you said from the tape than from your recollection. And you see, you could tape your chamber and hear what they talk about. And then they go home, 4 or 5 of them, and have a game of bridge, what they do, and you tape that and listen to it. And just see what's happening. You can find out. Get some of these real estate people, you know.
I don't have the time.
No. But somebody, you know, you could get a project.
I belong to the Chamber of Commerce, and I belong on the Agricultural Committee, and I attend about half of those functions.
Yeah.
I don't try to attend the full chamber meetings or any other portion of it.
Oh, really?
I just don't try to, because I get to work not later than 7:30 in the morning. I get up at 5:30 and and read the paper thoroughly and shave and dress and eat breakfast.
Yeah.
And get to work not later than 7:30. And since my wife works nights and sleeps until 8:30 at night, well, I try not to get home before 7:30 or 8 or 8:30.
Yeah.
At night. And then many nights I'm on the road somewhere doing something. But I do belong to two or three civic organizations and there are different things. Maybe it covers state pattern, you know, like Farm Equipment Association or the Irrigation Association or such things as this.
Yeah.
And because of my age, well, I happen to be on the board of several of these associations. If you belong long enough, well, you just outlive everybody and you wind up somewhere on these boards. So, you just don't get into the type of discussion that I think everybody that belongs to that organization to start with, well, let's say 90% of everyone that joins the organization, did it because they thought it was good for business.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can go into a meeting, and I think this would be true in anything you went into, and sit there, and two or three people will start fussing about the taxes and the other things that are involved in your pocketbook.
Yeah.
And the chairman will call the board to order and say, now we can get a new ag building, federally funded, if we'll do so-and-so, and right away everybody's for it. The fact that they are overburdened with taxes a minute ago doesn't mean a thing because somebody else is going to pay for it, and somebody else isn't going to pay for it. It's going to come out of their own darn pocket.
Yeah.
And until they wake up and realize it, well, there's not. Have you seen the ad today on the railroad strike?
No.
Put out by the railroad people?
No.
It's interesting. It's some of the same old arguments you've been hearing for a long time.
Yeah.
They get paid for a full day's work for 2.5 hours run.
Yeah.
They want extra pay for the brakeman who carries a radio, a walkie-talkie radio now, so that he can talk with the engineer. The union wants extra pay for the whole crew if one man carries a walkie-talkie. But I think if you ever did any horse trading, why, you always ask for more than you're expected to get and did your very best to come out with a very minimum figure that you had in mind to start with.
Yeah.
I think this is what the union is. Of course, the railroad is presenting their side in this particular ad. But it gets down to these things that everybody is interested in what's good for their pocket, except those people who don't have any pocket to fill, like the wives in the family.
Yeah.
And they go a college minded. They get a college minded.
But now let me tell you, Red, I want to make one condition on that ecology business. One reason they call it ecology is that the public officials won't say it. So you've got to go outside the channels. I mean, you're forced outside the channels. You see, your four congressmen have got this ecology stuff sewed up here. So you've got to work through Lyman Rogers or this lady up here. There's no OAS or the Sierra Club or some of the national figures, you see. You can't work through your people at home. Now, you call it ecologists, but it's not ecology. It's just something that the congressman won't support.
What is the true definition of ecology?
Oh, I have no idea.
It was in the paper the other day, or in one of the magazines earlier.
I don't go into definitions.
But
let me tell you, let's go back to this this other thing. I think the edge is a little obvious apparent You can feel it in so much of the talk. Well, it's just occasional talk. It comes out. Now, that man was sitting right over there, and for no damn reason at all, I wasn't going to misguide his son. I didn't tell him what to do. I read Faulkner with him, and he picked that up. And his merchandising practices were metropolitan. Now, he kept a fairly mild voice, but it really wasn't mild. It was sharp. And he's a big official in it. And there was absolutely no reason for him to, no occasion.
Well, you were hurting his pocketbook.
I didn't say anything.
Yeah, you just said you're liable?
Except the boy. And I also told the boy he could sure learn if he stayed in Winn-Dixie. I learned that way back. I never turn the children against the parents.
Yeah.
I don't give a damn what they do. I'll go along with the parents. They're doing the best they can. But you don't have to stop with that. You can keep it going.
But you were hurting the man's pocketbook indirectly, but you were hurting it. You mentioned a competitor. And if the competitor takes one sale away from him, he feels he has been hurt in his pocketbook.
Yeah. Well, he couldn't stand that old fashioned
It wasn't that. Yeah, his method was the best because it was the best. I expect if you said that in front of an Eli Whitman, he'd come up with just as many good arguments for his type of selling.
Oh, really?
I expect. I just don't know. I don't know how well organized they are, but they're fairly
I didn't think there was any ground for argument in Eli Witt. I thought it was just an old world outfit, and they take the discards from the business community. They take boys and put them on trucks who can't do anything else, who don't antagonize people, and they write pleasant, and they talk about baseball scores mostly.
You know, I haven't had that any experience with Eli Witt. But you take Penny. You know, the old man started out with nothing at all and built it into a real deal. How about the man who just recently died that he always has a partner, and the partner's name usually is in conjunction with Belk Lindsay.
Belk.
These people started out with nothing, but somewhere along the line, why they had to learn to instill the fact in their people that they were working for the best damn outfit that there was. This is a Marine viewpoint. You're working for the best damn outfit of all the military services if you're a Marine.
Yeah.
Therefore, you don't need as much money as the other fella does.
Yeah.
Loyalty. It's part of it, and you attacked something that the man eats, dreams, and sleeps about. I mean, just by mentioning a competitor, that's all. And in front of someone else. Now, possibly if you just said it, just sitting here like you and I are talking, it might not have been that.
Let me tell you. You see, I have a literary background, and use language is one thing or another. But I also, lose my shirt out in the modern world, too. I was so disappointed down in McIntosh. Now, this is shifting it from what you said. You have all those old families down there, those great big old houses. Some of them pretty well healed, and all of them living a leisurely life. And I have talked to any number of them at one time. I went to church down there and everything. And there's not a one of them that reads a book or recites poems. Now, when I was growing up, people like that recited poems, Red. And they don't recite poems, even Edgar Guest.
I'll read a book, any book, one time.
Yeah.
I never go back. If I pick the book up again, it maybe it's 50 years since I've read it, but I expect I won't read over a paragraph before I realize, well, I've read this book. At the most, I may read 5 pages and say, no, there's something here for me. I've either read a condensed version or I've read the book.
Yeah.
But I don't go back. I don't memorize poems like we were taught to in school. But you had an educated class back there. People.
Cultivated.
Yeah, but they didn't have anything else to do. Now, you can take a man who can't read or write, and I expect his memory is better than yours and mine.
Yeah, that's right.
We had a colored man in there the other day. He's 80-some years old. And for a year, he's been insisting that he came in and paid a bill.
Yeah.
And gave one $100 bill and five $20 bills.
Yes.
Well, I couldn't find any record of it on the books. And he says, I gave it to your man at the counter. I said, did you get a receipt? He said, I didn't get a receipt. Well, of course, it's a mistake to give anybody cash and not get a receipt.
Yeah.
But I've had the man 15 years, and he's never come up wrong yet. And I don't believe he did this time. But eventually, I got to digging in, and we were talking about an open account, and we keep your open account as a running account, and we keep it in one set of the files. Then if you have a note account, we put the note account in on a separate card. Looks identical like the other one, but it's in a different file. Well, eventually, I went all through my daily sheets looking for $200, flat $200, and I run it back 6 months both ways to see that it couldn't possibly be that error. Because we could have taken $200 and applied it to somebody else's account. This is a common error. I mean, when I say common, maybe it happens 2 or 3 times a year. But anyhow, especially where there's many Zetrauers, you could see where we could very easily give credit to the wrong Zetrauer or the wrong Markham or somebody like that. And once in a while, some entirely unrelated name, because the man got the money in his hand and somebody calls him on the phone, and when he gets back over there, he's thinking about the problem. The new problem he's got, and then he writes down on it. But anyhow, it developed that this old man has come in and paid $232.83. He doesn't have any recollection of the $32.83 and insists he didn't pay it. But it is plainly written down there that his son had a note and that the old man came in and paid off the son's note. Now, he's got the NAACP on my tail because he paid $200 that there's no record of, and I can show him where he paid $232.38, whatever it was. And he didn't know, so I said, I didn't do that. I just paid $200. But it worries me because that old man can't read or write. All they can do is make a mark.
Yeah.
But his mind's not cluttered up with TV and a million other problems.
That's right.
They're cluttered up with just his problems and what he recommends or remembers and so forth. And it worries me.
Yes, that's right. Well, experience that we used to think of, you see, there's no such thing as that anymore. Experience is something that you look at.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah.
I can take a piece of machinery and move it around by myself down there, where I can turn it over to 4 people down there, and they probably can't get it done.
Yes. You know, I don't know what that does to the mind. You know, when you're so agile and you can handle so many complex things, I just remember my own case. I pretty well ruined my mind at the Library of Congress. I'd go up there every time I'd get off, you see, and I was looking for something.
And I just go through it just a pulp machine. I go through those books.
Mm-hmm.
I just looking for one or two things.
Are you a speed reader too?
Well, you sort of developed it, you know, doing that. And then one summer, I got the idea that I needed to get into. I'd studied going into medieval subjects. I'm not a scholar in that line. But I thought, well, wouldn't it be nice if I could read some of that medieval Latin? And you know what I did? I'd spend a week on one paragraph. And what I finally, you see, it just about tore my machinery up there, really. I when I was reading that stuff, all my faculties were just concentrated. And what I finally found out was that if it had been in English, and good English, I still wouldn't have understood what the hell they're talking about. shoot. They had too many unknown equations. I did that one whole summer. So I give up, you see. I can't.
I can remember that all Gaul was divided in three parts, the greater of which was on this trace part. How did this go?
Yeah.
And that's all I can remember out of 3 years of Latin.
Yeah. No, that's right. That's right. Now here's what you want. You want a thesis that will carry you into the material. It doesn't slant it. It's just a thesis. And a negative position of doubt opens it up better than one of belief. And you'd say, you'd go into this Chamber of Commerce, like I said, and tape some of their proceedings, and then when they were playing bridge or in a committee. And you go into it with that statement that that is not common talk the way it used to be, but the talk, so much of that talk now has an edge to it. It heats them up. Well, you don't have to find that. What you do, that opens it up and gives you something to look for, and you can see what they're doing. But I don't think anybody knows anymore how anybody else thinks or feels. It's a tremendous thing.
I don't run into this edge that you're talking about. Really, I mean, in the committee meetings that we get into, because we're working towards a common goal, and when you ask the man from the horse farm how he's coming with a law that he needs, why, yes, maybe the edge shows up right there, but when he's discussing the forestry program, he has no edge. Maybe the forester has. Or when we're talking about the tractor business and somebody mentions John Deere, for instance, why, I might develop an edge. But only when you get down either on something that the person is rabid about or his pocketbook again, which he's always rabid about. I mean, this is the only thing. But as a whole, the canal, yeah, I can see him drawing signs on that right fast, the ones who believe one way and the ones who believe the other, and then people like myself that don't really know and are willing to sit back and not take an edge on the thing. But I don't run into it like you seem to. I run into it without, from your viewpoint, to me it's just a normal thing, and from your viewpoint,
yeah,
it's not normal, and
yeah,
maybe this is...
Well, I'll tell you, I hadn't thought in those terms either until those two things happened. This girl that I got in pretty close to, her reporting on what happened to that, you know?
Yeah.
And I could see that her thesis was so strong that it blinded her.
Yeah, she knows.
And she didn't come out of that with any experience at all.
Yeah.
You want me to
go to the phone? Yes, we're going out there. And
and this grocer, this Windex man. Now they're the two cases that come that
we see all the way through. I've run into the people. I've lived in various parts of the country, and I've lived close to various ethnic groups. And I've run in back in the old days to some people who had very positive ideas and could never see the other side of it because they were blinded.
Yeah.
My mother, for one person, liked to read very much. But if she read something and repeated it, and you asked her, "Well, Mother, why do you believe that?" She said, "Well, I know it's true. I read it." She was brought up to believe that only the truth was printed.
Yeah.
And and this type of thing, the people that release them. I've studied with Jesuit priests. I've talked with the different denominations of the Protestants, and invariably you can take and reason with a Jesuit priest, but you can't reason with someone who is particularly in a country area of religion, because their argument is that, well, it's true because it's in the Bible. They just don't realize how many chapters of the Bible were written and discarded, and how many times it was copied by hand, and how many times it was varied because somebody didn't understand the meaning of one particular language. And the thing you're talking about in your ancient Latin, who interpreted it into something that you could really understand, and so forth. But a Jesuit priest will get down and he'll argue with you that back in those days, people were better educated than they were in the Middle Ages, and bring up point after point to prove his point. And I don't mean that I've studied with, I was exposed to Catholic religion because I was going with a Catholic girl, and before you can go very far with a Catholic girl, you're going to get exposed to some of these priests. They're going to try to sell you on the idea that Catholic religion, of course, is the only religion. And they go to an extreme, but they will argue with you, I mean, or reason with you, whatever you want to call it. They will bring up other sources and other facts as they see them.
I'm shifting on you. The polls, I think, are worse than useless. I think they're harmful. And see, I'm making a strong statement. That doesn't mean I believe that. That means I'm just getting into something. You couldn't, there wouldn't be any form of poll or questionnaire that they could ask me about the Barge Canal. I don't think the Barge Canal is a point. I think it's just going in the wrong direction. I'm not for it or against it. I just think it's beside the point. And you see, they won't put that on the poll.
No.
You have to be against it.
You got to be, yeah, quick cut stand, one way
or
the other. Yes,
yes. And I don't...
You're about the same position on the canal I am. I know enough about the water that I know that some harm can develop from that particular factor. I don't know enough about economics to know whether it's good or bad. I don't know. And I'm willing to sit back and say, well, but I hate to see our money spent on something established and then have it destroyed again. Now, that I hate to see.
And the spending money now heats up the economy, and the damn economy is too hot already.
Oh, yeah.
They need to slow it down.
Somewhere they've got to. And when Meany comes out and says he's willing to listen to wage and price controls, why, you can see something happening somewhere.
Yeah.
Because it has got, it's just a competitive thing. No one's going to keep on paying dues to a union unless he thinks he's going to get future benefits from those dues.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got five. Let me get this thing for you.